Bible, and kind of gone over this one. It's been a couple years though, but particularly thinking about some of the Old Testament military heroes, one of them that came to mind was Uriah, and his story, the things that went on in his life. There is, I know I've said this before, but when I read the Bible, sometimes I'm fascinated and interested, very interested in why some of the stories that are included are included. And you understand it's part of a bigger, you know, storyline, history, and what God's doing. And kind of like what we were talking about in Sunday school, you know, the Bible is, it's multidimensional in that there's a lot of things that are being said. You've got what the Lord is doing, and you've got multiple descriptions of what the Lord is doing in several different ways and how it's being explained. One of those ways is through the foreshadowing, and just you and I would probably call it typology, of characters in the Bible, of people. And I am a little bit hesitant with some of the typology because I feel like it can be like the way some people use numbers, and you can just make numbers kind of say anything. And, you know, the numerics, and some of you have heard of this, some of this stuff, and it's just like, that's not how numbers are used, or that's not what they are. But I feel like typology can be that way too, because you can just read into a story a bunch of stuff that, you know, it's not really part of what was intended at all. However, there are some foreshadowings in the Bible, and they're all foreshadowings of Jesus Christ. And there, it's pretty clear that this instance in history, of everything you could have said, everything that could have been recorded at this time, this is what got recorded. And not just the story is what was recorded, but the way it was said, the highlights of it. Because you know there's more things about people's lives that aren't being said, so it's interesting the things that are actually being said. And that corresponds with what the author here is doing, the Lord is doing. So Uriah, as a man and as a warrior, as a soldier, he was one of David's mighty military men. You know, I guess you could think of him like a, you know, special forces kind of person. And if you're familiar with the story that, you know, David and adultery with Bathsheba, Bathsheba was Uriah's wife. So that's the history. That's where you get to Uriah. But what's said about him? There's nothing really negative ever said about him, and everything that seems to be described about his life is very well crafted to explain and foreshadow the Messiah, the coming Messiah, and that's all through littered all through Israel's history and the recorded history. You know, here's some foreshadowings, here's some express prophecies about the Messiah, and then here's some characteristics. You got, I think, all of the story of Joseph in the Old Testament and Genesis is very much there because of as much of where he was in Egypt and how Israel got into Egypt, but also because of the things about him that are recorded are very characteristic of the coming Messiah. So Uriah is like this. So with Memorial Day coming up, I thought about this warrior and some of these fallen heroes in the Bible. And so what I'm going to do is go through and give you six or seven things. They're just details of his life. And they're just carefully crafted details because you know there's more to his life. What's actually said is right in line with Israel's Messiah. And what's interesting about this, on top of its, you know, almost like prehistory to the Messiah, you know, foreshadowing stuff. But the fact that Uriah is not even an Israelite, he isn't, and you'll see that in the Old Testament quite a bit, all of these folks who are not part of this nation that God is using to, like we talked about in Sunday school, identify himself, these people are more characteristic of God than his own nation that he's trying to use to identify himself with. So 2 Samuel chapters 11 and 12 is where we are, and I'm not going to read all of this. I just get you to up to speed here. David has, he has committed adultery with Bathsheba. He's saw her and committed adultery with her. Now, you know, she's pregnant, and that's the sin. That's, he's Bathsheba's, Uriah's wife. And so this is where we'll pick it up in 2 Samuel chapter, it's chapter 11, but pick it up in verse 4. It says, "And David sent messengers and took her. She came into him, lay with her, for she was purified from her uncleanness, and she returned unto her house. And the woman conceived and sent and told David and said, I'm with child. And David sent to Joab, saying, send me Uriah the Hittite. And Joab sent Uriah to David. When Uriah was come unto him, David demanded of him how Joab did, how the people did, and how the war prospered." Remember, there's a war going on that David's not a part of. He's in Jerusalem, and all of his armies and men are away. David's in Jerusalem, so asking about how things are going. In verse 8, David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house, wash thy feet." And Uriah departed out of the king's house, and there followed him a mess of meat from the king. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord, and went not down to the house, to his house. And when they had told David, saying, Uriah went not down into his house, David said unto Uriah, "Camest thou not from thy journey? Why then didst thou not go into thine house?" And Uriah said unto David, "The ark and Israel and Judah abide in tents, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are encamped in the open fields. Shall I then go into my house to eat and to drink and to lie with my wife? As thou livest and as thy soul liveth, I will not do this thing." And David said to Uriah, "Tarry here today also and tomorrow, and I will let thee depart." So Uriah abode in Jerusalem that day and the morrow. And when David had called him, he did eat and drink before him. He made him drunk, and at even he went out to lie on his bed with the servants of his lord, but went not down to his house. And it came to pass in the morning that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. And he wrote in the letter, saying, "Set Uriah in the forefront of the hottest battle, and retire ye from him, that he may be smitten and die." It came to pass when Joab observed the city, that he assigned Uriah unto a place where he knew the valiant men were. And the men of the city went out and fought with Joab, and there fell some of the people of the servants of David, and Uriah the Hittite died also. Then Joab sent and told David all the things concerning the war, and charged the messenger, saying, "When thou hast made an end of telling the matters of the war unto the king, and if so be that the king's wrath arise and say unto thee, wherefore approached ye so nigh unto the city when ye did fight? Knew ye not that they would shoot from the wall? Who smote Abimelech the son of all that? Did not a woman cast a piece of millstone upon him from the wall?" Da, 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 da. Verse 22, so the messenger went and came and showed David. Actually, at the end of verse 21, I need to note that, because Joab tells him, be sure to tell David that Uriah is dead. If he back talks you and says, why did you get involved in this battle? Why did you get so close to the wall? Surely you knew people were going to die. Joab says to the messenger, if he brings that up, just let him know that Uriah is dead, because that's the point of this whole thing. And so the messenger does that. He tells David all that Joab sent him for. Verse 23, and the messenger said unto David, surely the men prevailed against us and came out unto us into the field, and we were upon them even unto the entering of the gate, and the shooters shot from off the wall upon the servants, and some of the king's servants be dead, and thy servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. And then David, in his very cold, calculated relief, says, thus shalt thou say unto Joab, let not this thing displease thee, for the sword devoureth one as well as the other. Make thy battle more strong against the city and overthrow it, and encourage thou him. And so we'll stop there. So that is the terribly tragic history of Uriah and the terrible history of David and his sin with Uriah's wife. There's several things in here, though, that I think the Lord highlights to start to lay, not even start, he's continuing really to lay this foundation and this understanding of who this Messiah is that's going to be coming. And so those attributes are highlighted in Uriah's life. And let's pick this apart a little bit and go through it. The first thing I notice is David's obviously messed up, and I shouldn't even say messed up. It's just sin is what it is. He's sinned, and now he's trying to cover it up. And now the woman that he's sinned with, now Bathsheba, she's pregnant. And how are you get out of this? Well, you kill the husband. And this is what David's plan is. So this sin is just growing in. It's just multiplying. It's just getting worse. It's festering. So David calls Uriah home, tells him to go back to your wife, sends food and all that stuff to him, but Uriah doesn't comply. Uriah chooses instead, and he explains to David. He says, well, how am I supposed to come back and enjoy my life when the people that I'm fighting with, who are protecting the Ark of God and protecting the, you know, really defending the name of the Lord, how am I supposed to rest easy in my house when all the people that I'm fighting with are still fighting and losing their lives? And so Uriah stays outside. Of course, this really messes David up. You're supposed to go back to your wife and, you know, hopefully something happens so that you can say that she's pregnant by you. But that doesn't happen. So the first thing I notice is what the Lord highlights in Uriah's life is Uriah chooses the things of God over his own pleasure. And it may be just a real simple thing, but I would say in this situation, this is a pretty big decision for Uriah. I mean, I think if I'm in that position, you get to come home, you get time off, and you get to come home. You just come home and enjoy your time off, but not Uriah. Uriah says, I can't. I am part of this army that's defending the name of the Lord, and I can't just come home and enjoy life when all the people that I'm with and all the people that I'm fighting with are out risking their lives. And so Uriah chooses the things of God over his own pleasure, and this is going to pose a problem, but it's a characteristic that the Lord obviously appreciates. When people choose his things over their own things, and the big picture, the idea is his things are always going to be, they're going to be better than what your selfish motives and things like that. But Uriah chooses the things of God, and God highlights this. And what's interesting about it, that really leads to the second problem that is most like Christ in this. That the integrity of this man makes sinners uncomfortable. It puts David in a worse position now. Now David has to deal with, and you know, tough luck for that, but David's got to deal with Uriah is not complying. He's not going with the plan here. So first thing will say this. The Lord appreciates people who will, first of all, choose things of His over things of their own. In fact, Paul would say it is as time goes on, as things unravel, people just become more selfish. They become lovers of their own selves. And you see that. I think that explains probably, I don't know what percentage, but a pretty high percentage of the problems you see in the culture. It's just people are just lovers of themselves, and that's, you know, it just dog-eat-dog type thing. But Jesus Christ, of course, He would choose the things of God, even to the point of death, as Paul explains it. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, that He gives His life. He chooses service to God. He gives His life even to the point of death. And so Paul would explain, let this mind that he thought that Jesus Christ had, let that mind be in you. And Uriah is an example of that. And this is a part of Uriah's life that gets recorded. And like I said, of all the things that could be recorded, these are the things that get recorded. And I think that's interesting. I think you ought to take note of that. Because it tells you there is some author who of all the things he could say, this is what he's choosing to say. So Uriah chooses the things of God over his own pleasure. That's probably verses 10 and 11 there in 2 Samuel 11. And that makes obviously the sinners uncomfortable. So David is now in a position where Uriah is not complying. There's not really a chance that this pregnancy isn't going to be found out by the husband, by Uriah. And so now what do? Now David's in a bind. I mean, he's a bigger bind than he was before. And as Uriah doesn't go with the plan, this obviously frustrates David. But this is what Jesus Christ, His whole ministry was a frustration to sinners. It just made people mad. I should say it made the people who wanted to live in their sin mad. It made the self-righteous people mad. And Jesus Christ living His life as the Son of God and essentially retaining His integrity, serving God, this makes the Pharisees frustrated and mad. It makes them envious. It makes them angry at Jesus Christ. And this is the same thing that's going on here. Uriah doesn't comply. He chooses the things of the Lord, and now the sinners involved, they're getting increasingly frustrated with the righteous. And Uriah is the righteous here. It's so wild because this storyline, this thing that's being said and this history that's being said with Uriah, he is not an Israelite, but he is more righteous than these Israelites who are supposed to be carrying the name of God. And so this the Hittite is a righteous man who cares more about the things of God than David. It's incredible. So Uriah's integrity, he makes sinners uncomfortable, just like Jesus Christ. That's the second thing. Jesus Christ's integrity would make sinners uncomfortable and desperate. How they become desperate because they can't manipulate these righteous people. They can't make them do what they want them to do. They can't control the situations the way they want to control them. And now they can't hide their sin in the way they want to hide their sin. And so now there's threats that this sin is going to become open. So David makes this plan. So that's point number two. Uriah's integrity makes sinners uncomfortable, just like Jesus Christ. Uriah the Hittite. Keep that in mind. Uriah the Hittite. Not Uriah the Israelite. Uriah the Hittite. Third thing, so David scrambled. I mean, what do we do now? So in his frustration, David writes a letter, an instruction for Joab. Remember, Joab's still in battle. And he hands this letter to Uriah and says, take this to Joab. These are the battle instructions. The battle instructions are basically, find the hottest battle, put Uriah at the forefront and then retreat your men. And let Uriah die. And Uriah's carrying the letter. And he's carrying his own death warrant. And so Uriah is carrying the letter. He takes it to Joab. Joab reads it. And, Joab is something else. He is like, this guy is heartless. He is something else. Talk about a selfish guy. Joab is something else. So Uriah takes the letter, gives it to Joab. Joab reads it. All right. So we got to go to this particular spot in the battle. I know where they're putting their strongest forces, so we're going to go there. So Joab corrals the people, gives instructions, puts them in the hottest battle, puts Uriah at the forefront, and then calls for a retreat. But don't let Uriah know you're retreating. Just get your men out and leave Uriah there. And so... And what's terrible on top of this is a lot of other people die in this process. There's a lot of people dead because of all of this. What's the point here? Uriah is one of David's mighty men. He's a good man. And he's a good man who is betrayed by a friend. And that sounds a lot like Jesus Christ. He's a good man serving God. And now he's going to be betrayed by a friend. So Uriah, just like Jesus Christ, betrayed by a friend. Judas, I don't know at what point Judas decides that he's in love with money. But at some point he makes this decision that he loves money more than the things of God. And probably some things he didn't like about Jesus already and all that, you put all that together because usually you justify your bad decisions. You just justify them. It's your fault that I'm doing this. It's your fault I'm doing this. And I'm sure Judas had the same mentality. It's your fault that I'm going to be taking this money. It's your fault. You led us into this situation. You put us here. So Judas betrays Jesus Christ. David betrays Uriah. A good friend of his, or a friend. Number four, Uriah would end up dying in battle to cover someone else's sin. The whole point Uriah is dying is so that somebody else's sin would be covered up. And this is what happens. He's in battle. He's killed according to the instructions of David. Joab carries those instructions out, and Uriah ends up dying because of someone else's sin. And I will say this is one of the biggest complaints against the God of the Bible, the injustice. Why do people suffer because of someone else? Why is there innocent suffering? Uriah, yeah, he's a grown man. I'm sure there's other things in his life that have gone on that are just not recorded. But as far as God is concerned in this story, Uriah is good. He's been betrayed, and now he's going to die, not for his own sin. He's going to die as a direct result of David's sin. Which made me think, that is a lot like Jesus Christ. His death isn't because of him. His death is for other people. His death is for the world. And so the understanding and recognition of just injustice there, Peter talks about it quite a bit. And he actually says, this is one of the things that is most pleasing to God. When somebody, if you suffer because you caused the suffering, that's on you. But if you patiently endure suffering that doesn't really belong to you, that's something that's pretty remarkable character there. And Peter talks about that, and he uses Jesus Christ as the example, saying he died the just for the unjust. It's he lays down his life. Let this mind, arm yourself with this mindset, because injustice is a part of the world. It's a part of the system. When selfish people make decisions, then this is what happens. And so Uriah is, he's betrayed by a friend. He's going to die to cover someone else's sin. Because of Uriah's his purity, his integrity, it will make his death necessary, which is kind of interesting. It makes his death necessary in David's eyes. He has to die. And so now Uriah is going to die for someone else. This is point number 4 or 5 here. Next thing I notice, Uriah sort of enters, you know, this is really all that's said about Uriah. And granted, it's a huge event in David's life, huge sin. But I notice Uriah sort of enters into the scriptures and then exits the scriptures having nothing bad to say about his life. He's a good man. He served his country, served the God of Israel. He gave his life. He wanted to be a part of the things that God was doing with the nation. And as far as God is concerned, he's a good man. He's on the right side of things. And so Uriah enters the scriptures here, and then he exits the scriptures. Now he's gone. He's dead. And there's never really any blame placed on Uriah. He doesn't have any guilt, which I think is, that's just like Jesus Christ. He comes in, he's written about, his life is recorded, and it's good things. He goes around doing good. There's no sin. In fact, he says that, and he makes the offer to people who are trying to harass him. He says, well, bring up a charge. Tell me what I've done. Tell me what thing you're going to accuse me of. What am I guilty of? I've gone around, I've done good. What am I guilty of? And the biblical answer is there's nothing he's guilty of. And the biblical answer with Uriah is there's nothing he's guilty of. He came into the scene. He is a good man. He serves God. And then now his life is destroyed because of someone else's sin. And now he's a memory. Interesting, it's just like Jesus Christ in that. And then this last thing, this isn't the end of the story, because in chapter 12 you have a prophet that shows up, a preacher. And Nathan shows up, and this thing has been, obviously, when David writes some of the Psalms, he is so far from God. And he knows it, and he is so guilty, and he hates his life, and it's just, it's miserable. I mean, you've committed adultery, you had a son, and you've killed her husband, and he is just, he's a mess for, I don't know, a year and a half. Just terrible. But I will say, you know, some guilt can be misplaced, but that kind of guilt isn't misplaced. You need that. You need to feel bad when you do bad things. But here comes this prophet in 2 Samuel 12. And he tells this story to David. In verse 1, chapter 12, verse 1, 2 Samuel. It says, and the Lord sent Nathan unto David, and he came unto him and said unto him, there were two men in one city, the one rich, the other poor. The rich man had exceeding many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing, save one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished up. And it grew up together with him and with his children. And it did eat of his own meat, and drank of his own cup, and lay in his bosom, and was unto him as a daughter. And there came a traveler unto the rich man, and he spared to take his own flock, and of his own herd, to dress for the wayfaring man that was coming through, but took the poor man's lamb, and dressed it for the man that was come to him. Dressed means he killed it. He's going to barbecue it. And David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. And he said to Nathan, "As the Lord liveth, the man that hath done this thing shall surely die. And he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he had no pity." And Nathan said to David, "Thou art the man. Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I anointed thee king over Israel. I delivered thee out of the hand of Saul. I gave thee thy master's house, thy master's wives into thy bosom, and gave thee the house of Israel and of Judah. And if it had been too little, I would moreover have given unto thee such and such things. Wherefore hast thou despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? Thou hast killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword, hast taken his wife to be thy wife, and hast slain him with the sword of the children of Ammon. Now therefore the sword shall never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me, and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife." Now he's going to go on and talk about more judgment, and David's going to just basically fall on his face and just, he knows it. He's messed up. But the story that Nathan uses is the story about this lamb. And interestingly enough, in the story, the guy that's the lamb is Uriah. Uriah is the lamb. Uriah is the one that gets sacrificed. Uriah is the one that gets killed for someone else's purposes. Uriah is the one. And isn't that convenient that Uriah characterizes Jesus Christ and all of these other things, and then at the end of the thing, end of the story here, Uriah is a lamb. That's the story. And that's the preaching, that's the sermon that cuts to David's heart. And it gets David, I mean, it's an incredible, the short-sightedness of us as, you know, sinners, when we're faced with the exact thing that we've done and we can't see it. And it's this version of, you know, here's Nathan, and he preaches to David about this lamb, and David is just irate that some rich guy would steal somebody's lamb and cook the lamb just because he didn't want to take his own. And David is irate about this. And he is so mad. He's so righteously indignant about who would dare do this. This guy needs to pay back what he did. And then, David, we're talking about a lamb here. But in your life, we're talking about a man and a wife, and you killed the man, and you took his wife. This isn't about a lamb. This is about a man and a murderer and an adulterer. And David is just crumbled to the ground. And he'll never be right in the sense that he was before with God. He's messed up the testimony of Israel with the nations. He's messed up his own family. But the illustration that's used, and I know you know where I'm going with it, the illustration that's used to prick David's heart is the story of a lamb. Uriah is the lamb. Jesus Christ is the lamb. Uriah is all of these things. He chooses someone who chooses the things of God, as a Hittite, no less, chooses the things of God. He's someone whose integrity makes the sinners around him uncomfortable. He's someone who is betrayed by a friend. He is someone who his death would cover the sin of someone else, or at least attempt to. His death would cover the sin of someone else. He is someone who is, there's never anything bad about said about Uriah. And so in all of these cases, this Hittite, it is characterized as, he's someone like Christ. And then when the Lord wants to finally get to the heart of the matter with David, he uses Uriah as a as a lamb. Just like Jesus Christ, the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world. Now, when I read stuff like this, it just puts me in awe of whoever this author is. And I know who the author is, and you probably do too, but this author, so many thousand years before Jesus Christ shows up, is not only telling the story of the nation as you said in Sunday school, is establishing the identity of God. But within this storyline, all of these little foreshadowings of who this Christ is going to be. And it's interesting, in this case, it's not one of the Israelites, it's a Hittite. It's Uriah, a mighty warrior, a fallen soldier, who is more like Jesus Christ in this account and really a lot of others, but more like Jesus Christ than even the king of Israel is at this time. Incredible. It's incredible that whoever's writing this has all of these things in mind, and that's why these details are being put in here. Of all the things that could be said, this is what's being said, and it follows this unified spirit all the way through, and it's so interesting. There's just no man that could be responsible for things like this. But Uriah is as a type of Jesus Christ, and in these ways, maybe you could find more, but in these ways, for sure, his life illustrates the coming Messiah, the Lord Jesus Christ. And so now it's fit into this history of Israel. And so you can see the things that the Lord appreciates by observing what he chooses to write about. And the things he chooses to write about are the things that pertain to the Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. So I hope that is helpful for you. And I don't know, we got to...